With Renault, official car partner of the GAA, driving passion for sport and communities throughout Ireland and abroad.
We may not be able to get in on the sporting action like we're used to, but we can get in on some exclusive offers from Renault. To celebrate their second year as official car partner of the GAA, Renault is offering a range of special offers on their new and used vehicles, exclusive to all GAA club members. So now you can take home the win right to your door. Check out Renault.ie/GAA to find out more.
A grain of rice is going to tip the scale. Just remember that, then.
There's a small bit of a needle there.
Come on, Mayo, you've got to get Andy Moran into the game.
Listen back to England.
Hello everyone, you're very welcome to the Irish Examiner Gaelic Football Show. My name is Paul Rouse and I'm joined today by Oisín McConville. The former Armagh footballer will be coming to Oisín in a little bit. He has a lot to say about Cork and Kerry and we need to give him space to make a full statement to the people of Cork. We're joined also by a very special guest today, Dermot Murphy, who won 4 All-Irelands playing in goals for Kerry and was a selector for almost a decade. Firstly under Jack O'Connor and then with Eamon Fitzmaurice. Dermot agreed to come on the show before the defeat, so this isn't going to be exactly what he thought he'd signed up for. But we have to start with Ciarán Sheehan, the Cork footballer. Last week, Ciarán walked among us like a prophet from the south, dispensing truth and wisdom, telling us the future. He didn't just tell us that Cork were going to beat Kerry. He told us how Cork would do it, the tone that would be set, and most of all, he made it clear that defeat to Kerry would not be countenanced.
There's a bit of edginess, there's a bit of rawness in the group. I absolutely think that they can win, and I believe they can win. To be honest, look, and Oisín, to be fair, and I think a lot of people are thinking the same, that Cork can get something out of this by not winning. That has gone on too much for Cork football. I think they can't accept anything else but a win. I think this game has actually got so much riding on it for Cork football. And the players know that, and the players are going to give absolutely everything. Cork are one win away from people actually kind of sitting up in their chairs and starting to notice that there's a team here. If I'm wearing a Cork jersey and I'm playing Kerry at the weekend and I go into a dressing room and the management or any other player or any part of the squad can see that I don't believe that we're going to beat Kerry, I'm wasting my time. I should be taking that Cork jersey back off me and walking out the door. From what I'm seeing, that's the attitude of this Cork team.
Ciarán, what was different about Cork yesterday?
To be honest, Paul, I think that the simple answer there is I think they've showed a hunger and desperation that they hadn't shown previously. They knew how much was on the line for this game of football. And no matter who the opposition was, be it Kerry, Dublin, Mayo, any team that's, you know, within that top five teams in Ireland, they needed to win that game. They needed to win it. And I think they needed to win a lot more than I'd say what Kerry felt like they needed to win it. And it showed. It showed throughout the game.
Cork wanted it more.
Yeah, I think that's the simple answer. I think there's a lot more ways in which Cork set up. I think the way they attacked the game. I think the way they hung on, the grit they showed. I think there's a lot of people would say that, you know, Kerry played poorly. I think that if a team plays poorly, they're playing poorly off the back of the other team, you know, making them play poorly. I think the Cork's pressure, I think, showed big time. Now, not as easy to see it in a wet, slippery day. But I think if you were there at the game, I actually wasn't myself, but I think I could just see that the pressure was on right from the start.
So what exactly worked? What were the plans that worked?
I think one of the key things was the Cork played with width. I think they played the flanks very, very well. I think Kerry had been doing that previously, you could see that by the last couple of league games with Paul Murphy and Gavin White. But I think Cork actually, Cork's wing forwards, John O'Rourke and I think Rory Dean, they put in a huge shift. And I think that kind of went a little unnoticed as well. They prevented the two lads from making their lung-busting runs down the wings, you know. And I think Cork, to the opposite effect, they moved the ball really well, were really careful in possession. I think when they got to that, 45 mark, and Kerry kind of, set up defensively really well at that point, Cork were very careful with how they used the ball. And I think that that told throughout the game. They waited for the right opportunities. They executed really well in comparison to last year's Munster final. And I think it showed. And I think it they hung in there right till the end and they got their opportunity. Yes, Kerry got away from him at times. You'd be looking in the last, last half of the extra time period and you'd be worried. But, I talked about belief and the belief that this Cork football team had. And that's right down through management as well. That's where
did that come from? Where did the belief come from?
I think Ronan has done a super job over the last number of years. I think off the back of the confidence they gained from last year's, Super 8s, their game against Kerry. And I mentioned it last week as well in relation to the Cork under 20 victory, the All-Ireland. Winning creates winning habits and, the kind of, I think it showed. I think Ronan's message really showed in the group. I think they really believed that they could win. And that was clear by hanging in there and them ending up getting a last minute goal to win it. But that I was just extremely proud from my living room last night watching the game, just that lads were just willing to dig deep and not give up on it. And look, again, it's a game that they'll cherish and remember, and they no doubt kind of celebrated with their families last night and will recognize the achievement today. But again, it's about looking at it a couple of weeks time now. Again, it's a Munster final. You beat Kerry, it's great, but it's nothing without carrying it on and winning a Munster title and going for from there.
We'll be coming back to you, Ciarán, to look in more in depth at how exactly Cork did this. But Dermot, the obvious question has to be, how does it feel to hear a Cork man say that his team wanted to win a Munster semi-final more than your team did?
The truth, quite simply, if you look at the way the game panned out from start to finish, and even in the first 5 minutes of it, I think Cork set the tone early on. They were very, very aggressive, and rightly so. That's the way that they had to be they had to go down that road if that's the way they were going to win. And to be honest, I don't think our fellas were really mentally prepared for that. To me, it looked like Cork played the game as if it was a knockout championship game, that there's no tomorrow, it was do or die. I thought Kerry played the game as if there was a back door there. That's the way it seemed to me, that they weren't. Cork just wanted it more. And you can see it through the 50-50s throughout the game.
Did Kerry take this game for granted?
I don't think they took it for granted. But I can guarantee you that the management would have been warning them as to what was coming down the tracks. Especially given the conditions on the day, it was always going to be a bit of a dogfight, really. But you just wonder sometimes with players as they get into their head a little bit, that maybe today isn't going to be as hard as maybe what Peter and the boys are telling us, that kind of way. And I just wonder, was that a factor at times? And I think Cork set the tone early and Kerry reacted poorly to it. And that carried through for the whole match then. And it was very, very obviously, it was very disappointing from a Kerry point of view. And Kerry played very, very poorly. But they could have done a lot more to help themselves as well.
But did the Kerry management not set the tone before the game by the team they picked? Have you ever seen a more negative Kerry team take the field?
Well, the team selection was conservative at best, very cautious. And I thought, look, when I saw the team picked, I saw Stephen O'Brien playing, and Stephen is he's a good attacking player. He's he'll take on his man, but he wins a lot of frees. He makes a lot of scores himself by bursting on through. But the other thing about Stephen is his work rate is quite good. He's as a half forward, he is going to tackle. He's going to get stuck in, and unless he had an injury that he wasn't able to play the full game. But to me, we had other fellas there that could have come in and played a more attacking role if he wasn't able to do that. And in fairness to Breen, they've used him as a sub in the two league games so far, coming on in that wing forward position when they're defending a lead, which is okay, I suppose, if that's the way you want to go down. But to start yesterday, I thought it was a bit of a stretch for him. And in fairness, he wasn't one of the worst of the Kerry guys there. He got stuck in, did his job, did everything that was expected of him. But again, I think in relation to setting the tone, it showed how Kerry were going to approach the game. By making that change.
And even away from personnel, they were set up very defensively.
They were. And I look, when you're looking at that kind of defensive system and the way teams play it a lot of the time, okay, you're getting bodies back behind the ball, but usually you see the opposition forwards, they'd engage the defenders much higher up the pitch coming out. And I thought what Kerry were going to do was, okay, Ronan Buckley drop back into the middle of the field as a third midfielder. Darren Moynan will come up and play as a half forward. And okay, the half forward will drop a bit and they leave the two lads pretty much ahead of the ball, which they hadn't done in the previous two games. But I thought they might go a slightly different way yesterday and turn that middle sector of the field into an absolute battleground. But what was happening, the game went on, Kerry were sinking deeper, 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 that it was almost on the 50-yard line before they engaged the Cockfellas there as the game went on. And it was too far back. It was just too far back. And even when they did turn over the ball, they still had the whole length of the field to go. And I didn't think that, okay, the system they had, and it had worked from a couple of league games, but they applied it very poorly yesterday, I thought.
Garrett, do you think the conditions had anything to do with the late changes and the way they set it up? Or, like, you know, the way you'd see that it's, you know, teeming rain down outside, it's kind of a slippy, kind of a bit of a dogfight, maybe. And I was just wondering, like, you know, because, you know, yourself, you know, Cork probably would be notorious for the running game, and, you know, Kerry would always be well aware of that. I'm just wondering, just because of the conditions, just because of Cork's running game, were they changing their tactics purely because of that, or was it a case of this is the way we're going to set up against Cork? Did they know that for the last, you know, number of weeks, or I don't know what your thoughts are on that?
I don't know. Like, I mean, you just wonder in the back of the mind of the management, was this a system for down the road? Are you know, is this something that we're going to bed this in here now and get over these next couple of games and use it for Croke Park? I don't really know. Only they could say that, like, you know. But even regardless of the personnel that were there, the system was set up to stop that Cork running anyway, because in the Munster final last year, I remember a lot of the Cork lads, they beat one player, drop the shoulder, take on a player, and it was nearly goal on every time from midfield in. So what I think they were trying to do was maybe get those bodies behind so that if a Cork player did beat his opponent, he's faced into more Kerry fellas. But the problem with that was, with me, with making that change, it left us very short of ball carriers to take the ball up the field without Stephen there, you know, when we did turn over possession, when we did get the ball. Because Cork had their homework done, and you referred to there earlier on Gavin White, on Paul Murphy, even on Tom Sullivan, you know, lads who were very good at driving up the field. They targeted those lads when they were in possession. They really went after them. And you can see, like, Ronan McCarthy did well, but Keane is there as well. I know Keane well, and he from his time with Kerry, and he's a great man to do homework in opposition and go after teams where they think they're strong. And I think Cork did that very well yesterday. That's where I think Stephen O'Brien could have been a very good player for Kerry, because he's good at doing that job as well, coming deep, getting the ball and running up the field and getting a bit of momentum going. So, or even trying to put somebody else in there, an attack-minded player, into the half-forward line as well, that you know, that could give them the same impact. But it didn't happen. Didn't happen for Kerry yesterday. Didn't happen at all.
Oisin, do you have a prepared statement that you want to read to the people of Cork, or is there anything you'd like to say to Kieran, or do you just want to move on from the whole thing?
I was thinking just a simple sorry.
Apology accepted, Oisin. That's not
right. I was going to sing it, but I thought that might
don't make do things that.
Worse. I thought that might make things worse. As I say, last week what I said was, right, to go back last week, what I said was, if Cork were to win this game, then something would have to be very different about Cork. And there was something very different about Cork. And the biggest thing and the biggest compliment I can give them is that when, even at the end of the game, 2 points down, Luke Connolly kicks a free kick from the stand, basically.
Yeah.
And when he kicks that, you know, it was their confidence and their belief seemed to be unwavering. And I thought this is the team that's going to just fall short. And I was still going to come on here this morning. I was still going to apologize, because there was something dramatically different about them. My apologies, but number 20 for Cork, the ball he won, the 50-50 ball he won on the far side of the field from where Luke Connolly took the
Yeah, unreal. The slide when he went in and slid in across.
Yeah,
unreal.
He's gonna, he's going to help me out. Ciarán, you're going to help me out. I'm sorry, I apologize. I forget his name. But when he won that ball, he was the attack developed again from there. And he had no God-given right to win the ball. There was a huge amount of mistakes. Kerry, the mindset just wasn't right. It wasn't right. And when you see them missing easy free kicks, you know that the mindset isn't right. And the thing that I would say most about Kerry was that there's substitutions. So the likes of Killian Spillane, you know he was going on there with a point to prove. He's in a completely different space in his mind than the rest of those Kerry players, I felt. I felt as if Kerry felt that eventually it was going to happen. Eventually it was going to turn around. There's one thing about Kerry that I actually, in a strange way, admired, though. They obviously had made the decision in the last number of months that this is the way they were going to play, and they weren't going to waver from that. And they continued to play like that. Now, they could have pushed up, they could have pressed, they could have went for the juggler, they could have done all those things. But I agree with Dermot. I think that the plan that they, when this was designed, and they played against Monaghan, and they played against Donegal, and it worked so well, that they were gonna continue this. They weren't going to blink the first time that things started to get tough. Because if you do that, it sends a signal out to the players to say, listen, we're not actually 100% sure if this is the way to go down the lane. And they were just trying to eke out a win and get over the lane. And
Cork just weren't allowing that. Isn't this the big problem for Peter Keane and for his management team? And it's that he overcorrected from the lessons of last year in setting up his team this year so defensively. I thought Tomás O'Shea was brilliant on the Sunday game last night in what he said. And he finished up with a sentence in which he said, Kerry set up for a game that's never going to come now. And is that not like an indictment of how you approach a championship?
It is, but I can still understand why they've done what they've done. And hindsight is a great thing. But if Kerry do come out of that game winning by a point yesterday, I wouldn't say it would have franked everything that had gone on, but what it would have done was, listen, lads, we're a work in progress. We won that game, but we're going to continue to play the way we're playing because we have bigger fish to fry down the road. Now, to get back to Cork, it would be patronising for me to come on this morning and say they showed all the fight, they won all the 50-50s, they've done all that. But you look at even the basic errors, and you do the basic error count and the difference between Cork. Cork made errors, yes.
Yeah.
But not as many fundamental errors as Kerry made. In on goal and just the opportunity to pass over that and just wanting to take that extra touch, wanting to make it the perfect score. And Cork, people saying Cork hung in there. Cork did a lot more than hang in there. You know, Cork had opportunities as well to get into a lead. And I think at the start of the game, at a period in the game, in the second quarter of the game when Cork were on top, a wee bit more belief at that stage from Cork, and they could have kicked on and be five or six ahead. But the thing for me was that the belief really started to come with Cork when they got to the second water break in the second half, and they turned around and looked at the scoreboard and they said, listen, lads, you know, we're still in there. We're still in this. These are not the team that everybody has built them up to be. Like a lot of people fancy Kerry to win the All Ireland. Do you know what I mean? Off the back of, well,
did you fancy them to win the All Ireland? Did you fancy them to win it?
No, I didn't fancy them to win it because I just always felt that Dublin are those couple of steps ahead, even though they've come back into the pack a little bit. But I mentioned about I was at the Monaghan game, and it would be fair to say that Kerry own that game, and Monaghan put a high ball into the square at the end that could have ended up in the net, and it would have been a draw, and you would have walked away from the game going, how could that possibly have finished up in a draw? So Kerry are a team who will keep you in it. The way they are playing, they will keep you in the game. But as far as Cork's concerned, I mean, hats off to them. Like
Kieran was saying about Kieran mentioned Rory Dean. I love just a glimpse at his GPS yesterday, because in the 74th minute, he got back, he was in his defence, and the next thing, he just started off on this run. And he looked like a lad who wasn't 100% sure if his legs were going to get him up the top of the field, but they did. And that's, there's a couple of things about that. There's, yes, there's the condition and all that, but you have to have the will to do that. You have to have the will and the drive inside yourself in order to do that. And I just felt they had that yesterday. Powder is exceptional. I'd love to see him play a little bit. If they could afford to, I'd love to see him play a little bit more out around the middle of the field. I'd love to see him, like, if your team is playing a maybe a third midfielder or something, for him to have the, for him to be in that area, break ball, go forward ball, still be able to cover off in defence. Tony Lean told me about this guy a number of years ago, and I've been keeping an eye out on him since. And he's been dogged by injury, obviously, but yesterday, hopefully he can stay injury free because he's the real deal.
And this approach, Kieran, to the game, it was transformed on one level by Mark Keane coming in. When did he join the panel? When did he rejoin the panel?
Mark rejoined only, was it 2 or 3 weeks ago? 3 weeks ago, maybe. I actually wasn't there at the time when he first came in. But he added a new dimension.
Did you know him in Australia? Had you been in touch with him in Australia at all?
Yeah, I met Mark for the first time in Australia, and would have met him a couple of times out in Australia, and built up a good relationship with Mark out there. And I have stayed in touch with him since. Over the past year or so, you know, when he was out there and I was back here in Ireland, and we had many a conversation about Cork football. And to think now, you know, how he's waking up this morning and feeling is amazing, really, to be honest. You know, it was straight out of the textbook AFL bodywork, the way the goal happened, to be honest with you. If you watched it, he kept his eye on the ball as soon as it came off the boot. Then he took his eye off the ball, reset into position, engaged Tommy Walsh's body, released in the drop zone, and ball into his hand, goal. So it was almost like it was straight out of the AFL textbook, you know.
Great feat, wasn't it? It was great feat to actually move himself to get the shot.
Great feat for a big man, but like to be able to judge the drop zone, to be able to release Tommy Walsh at just a split second that the ball just drops into his hand, and then get boot to ball as quick as he did for the size of him. Was very impressive. You know,
is he going to be here for the duration? Will he be able to see out the championship?
He'll be here for the duration. Yeah. Most AFL squads will be starting their preseason in January next year because of the whole COVID situation. But he I suppose he know himself. He wasn't really in the game when he came on. He wasn't really in the game. He did a couple of really nice things. Had a chip ball into, I think it was Michael Hurley at one stage, which was kind of split the Kerry defence as well. But all you need is one moment. He's a great pair of hands. He stood up. He was in the right spot. You know, he finished it off. And you know, credit to him. I'm sure him and his family would be very excited. But look, I do think that Cork, and just to touch on what Oisín said there about Rory Dean, there was a couple of examples of that. I think Sean Meehan, in the lead up to the goal there, again, the end of extra time, this fellow was playing the under-20 All-Ireland last year, centre-back, you know, or wing-back, and he came in, played centre-back against Kerry, you know, had an outstanding game, really, from the start to finish. But at the end, just to put an extra bit of juice in his legs, took on Kerry, you know, almost opened up. I was kind of saying, shoot, shoot, shoot.
Did you want him to shoot? Yeah, did you want him to shoot that time?
Absolutely, absolutely. I was kind of willing him to shoot. But do you know what? He made the decision. You know, he wanted to get it to someone that was, you know, more comfortable in that position. He popped it off. And, you know, it was just a sign of Cork's belief that they could do it again. That just that injection of pace. And I think there was a number of examples of it throughout the game. But I thought, in particular, the younger lads, Sean Meehan, I think even Colm O'Callaghan, no, he didn't, you know, come into the game a huge amount, but he gets a good taste of what, you know, competitive senior football is now. The likes of Killian O'Halloran, I thought was outstanding. I thought he kicked some crucial frees off the ground, again, when it was terrible conditions. and I thought he carried the world the ball. I thought he stood out for me, and I thought he was borderline man of the match as well with Poulter. Look, it's good signs. It's good signs. But again, it's important not to get carried away here. I think Cork can build on this. I think there, as I said, there is belief in the squad. It's just about taking the next step from here.
Dermot, we were talking about just about the goal for a second. The high ball's dropping, and it's coming into the square. You can see Tommy Walsh is grappling there. As a goalkeeper, are you coming? Where I'm coming from on this is I come from a club with a long dynasty of furlong goalkeepers, and I would be fairly sure that first of all with Martin and then with his son Ken, that there would have been hospitalizations under that dropping ball. Would you have come for that ball?
You had to. Well, you see, part of it there is as well is, and it was interesting seeing here Kieran on about Martin is Aussie rules training inside there. The man who was on him got exactly the same training as well, I'm sure, in his time, you know. And to me, it looked like with Tommy in there, it was a forward marking a forward because Tommy's positioning wasn't great. Mark readjusted when the ball was in the air. Tommy really needed to get goal side of him. He really needed to have his body between Mark and the goal. And if you look at it, Mark caught the ball into his chest. It wasn't a big high catch over his head, you know, like the marks you'd see in Aussie rules. And if Tommy had gotten himself into the right position, even if Mark had caught it, he would have been between him and the goal. Secondly, he could have boxed him out a little bit, just come in behind him a small bit. Then the goalie can come out and contest it. It makes it much easier for the goalie. So Tommy's positioning wasn't great in it. I still thought Shane could have come in it. I still thought he could have come in it and got something on it because Mark was almost in a standing position. He was taking the ball on the turn. Shane would have had the advantage of the jump on it. But I suppose at the time, Tommy could have called it or he backed Tommy to get it inside there. But it did look like a forward playing full back, you know, in the way it worked out. But it wasn't, it was just poorly defended all around, really, poorly defended. I know what you mean, like the goalie there could have come. And in that situation, all he would have had done was get a fist in it and get it out into the corner, you know. But again, hindsight is great.
If from the gist of the conversation so far is that Kerry were outfought and they were also really outthought in terms of how the teams were set up and how it goes. But were they also outskilled on the day? Like how Kerry's skills on the day were really patchy.
Dreadful, really. Dreadful on the ball. It was like, I mean, if you break it down a little bit more and you look at it, yesterday morning, if you told a Kerry supporter that even taking the conditions into account, Cork are going to score 10 points here in the 70 minutes, you would have taken that. You would have taken that yesterday morning and you would have backed the Kerry forwards, again, even though a bad day, to get more scores on the day. And you look at some of the chances that Kerry missed and like, skills, yes, were very poor. The amount of hand passes that went to ground, simple kick passes that didn't hit the target, you know, that skidded past their man because on the wet day, everything has to be so accurate and so on the money. But at the same time, the shooting up front, the decision-making up front. And to me, that really, and bad and all is Kerry, and Kerry were bad yesterday, but it was those, like, I've never seen a Kerry team miss 321-yard threes. Never. That's you wouldn't see that in your club team at home, really, you know, and that's not... And it's very hard to explain that when you look at the lads who are kicking it, you know, two of the best players that Kerry have had over the last couple of years. It's inexplicable, like, that you would miss those handy frees. There was a mark taken by David Clifford inside the 21-yard line at one stage with two backs on him, he played on. Again, poor decision-making. So there was numerous examples of that. Tony Brosson, I remember the first 10 minutes, they missed three or four very easy scores in front of the goal. And again, as Kieran said, they were under pressure a lot of the time as well when they were taking on these shots. But at the same time, Kerry made enough chances to win the match yesterday. Skill set, yes, I think this is something going back with some of the Kerry lads over the last couple of years. Kicking off their left leg or weaker leg isn't great with a lot of them. It's something that you would have noticed down the last couple of years. But I still think they made enough opportunities yesterday to win that game, bad and all as they were.
Like you'd probably have to think there was a bit of a mental thing there with Kerry yesterday in relation to from watching Kerry, you've seen them do amazing things skills wise, you know, Clifford and Shawnee O'Shea and these lads. They're unbelievably skillful team. What I'd say is I think Cork's discipline, I think there was a couple of moments. I think Poulter had a big hit in the first half, a turnover ball, and I think guys kind of got energy from that and from looking at the Cork lads. And I think Kerry knew they were in for a bit of a battle at that stage. And they tried things that they wouldn't normally try. They, as you said, made mention to there, Dermot, the couple of frees that they missed, which was very unlike them. And it's often said when you make an error, sometimes, even if you notice at training, sometimes when you make an error, there seems to be two or three errors that follow it. And it's how you kind of react to that is a sign of a very, very good team. Like you've seen Dublin do it over the years where, you know, they make a mistake and it might be at a crucial time, but all of a sudden they get the ball back and they're disciplined with the ball. They take their time. They look for their moment. Or they ramp up the pressure to the next level and they turn over the ball. So like just from watch, yes, I think from a skill set point of view, I think it was definitely this psychological side of it had an impact on the Kerry players. And as you mentioned earlier, the pressure and the flip side of that, Cork had the ball for 2.5 minutes or nearly 3 minutes at one stage and got a score off the back of it, you know, in dirty kind of wet conditions. And I think that played into the factor of, you know, the skill sets, you know, there was just a bit of I think the discipline side of it kind of just overpowered the skill side of, yeah, of yesterday's game.
Mentally as well, Kieran, too, you just wonder, too, sometimes are players as well prepared as they could otherwise be? Just themselves, and this isn't the management thing, this is purely down to the players themselves, like, are they ready for battle today? And you could see it in some of the decision-making there, especially in the second half of extra time. Kerry turned over some very, very poor ball. You know, there was frees driven 70 yards up the field when they should have retained possession. So maybe there was nobody coming looking for it. Might be another thing, but shot selection as well was dreadful. I thought at times that we shot when we should have held the ball, and we held the ball when we should have attacked and drove on, especially in the second half of extra time, because I thought Cork looked tired in that period of the game. A lot of them, you know, that there were a few more mistakes creeping into it, but mentally Kerry just weren't in a position to take advantage of it. Killian Spillane intercepted the ball towards the end of the game there, when it was a 1-point game, I think. It was a free that was taken and he just intercepted it. He tried to play it to David Clifford in. It was a 2-on-1. He hit the pass and was cleared up the field again. There was, like, and in fairness to Killian, I'm not picking him up because, you know, he came on in the 50th minute and he was Kerry's man of the match by an absolute mile, you know. But it just goes to show that the decision-making in attack and in possession yesterday, it was probably the poorest display I've seen from Kerry in possession, ball in hand, in a long, long time, you know. When our running game was stopped, when those runners up the field weren't able to advance and get the ball up as they usually were in the last couple of games, we really didn't have too much more other than that, really, you know, from an attacking sense.
Wasn't that surprising, Oisin, that once those runners were kept, that Kerry didn't adjust.
Yeah, well, it wasn't an evening really for kicking the ball in, because it was skipping off the ground and heading out. And I suppose when Cork were able to curtail those runners, the Kerry attack looked really, really clueless. You know what I mean? You're just talking, Dan was talking about that one, the Killian Spillane, but that was after a Cork error. I think there was maybe 2-3 errors in a row. And you're just saying at that stage, Just hold on to the ball. And I know it's very, very easy saying that, but to go back on the mindset thing, like anybody, you guys who manage teams, I know my team. If my team's going out onto the pitch and they're not 100% right, you know it after 10 minutes, and it's almost impossible to flip it, because once you have like that mindset didn't happen 5 minutes before you're now on the pitch. That mindset has been building the week in a match. And if you believe certain things in your mind, it's very difficult to turn that and flip it on its head. And as a manager, you're just over the line. You're just praying to yourself, let's just get over the line and I'll absolutely hammer them during the week for the next one.
Yeah.
But it's not good football. And the next one, just like Tomás said last night, the next one, it's not coming now until
as a player, year. Have you been on the field as a player in a match, yes, that you're expected to win, and it just goes from you, from a freeze point of view, from a shooting point of view, but on a general performance point of view?
Yes, and you know it, and you feel it, and you're trying to drag it back, and you can't, and it's the most frustrating thing. And you know what I mean? You're trying to get round everybody, and if you get a break, there's an opportunity maybe to flip it a little bit at half time. But you know, it takes a really good start then the second half. You know, and you need to then make sure that everybody's kicking on and everybody's on the same wavelength. But I've seen it. I've been on the pitch when it's happened on numerous occasions. Absolutely numerous occasions at club level, and we've just about squeaked over the line and won by a point, and the next day we come out moving by 10 because you're not going to let that happen again. Do you know what I mean? But it's the times when you're caught, it's really, that's the really sickening, you know, days whenever you're caught and you realise, you know, because of our mindset, we don't have another day out.
I think the lack of preparation plays a part here as well in relation to training. I think a lot of teams nowadays are training with scenario planning. So you might be, you know, 2 points down with, you know, 5 minutes to go. How do you play? How, like, you know, what do we need to do now in this scenario? Or flip side of that, we're 5 points up, you know, we're comfortable. How do we kick on with 10 minutes to go, you know? So I think limited preparation, I think, showed a touch there with Kerry as well in relation to how they responded to certain situations. Now, I could be completely wrong. They might have planned, but just from watching it, I thought that maybe they just weren't ready for, you know, that scenario of being, you know, a couple of points down, or, you know, or potentially Cork being within a point and you know, taking the game to them. And I think that's something, like, and now credit to, I think, have to mention the fact that Rowan and McCarthy management made some excellent substitutions at the right time, like bringing Luke Connolly on there. I thought he made a huge, huge difference. And he had to make that decision to not start Luke as well, you know. And I think he brought him on. He brought something different again to Cork's attack. He brought on a couple of other guys, fresh legs, Kerrigan at the right time, Paul Kerrigan with a bit of experience. Sean White, a guy that was playing centre forward against Kerry last year, came on. You know, Damien Gore, Paul Ring, 220s from last year. Like, these are guys that, you know, came on and got a good taste, as I said before, to senior football. But credit to management, they made the decisions and the calls at the right time. And I think that had a huge impact on the game as well.
And what's it like to be in the Kerry inter-county setup today?
You want to know, the blinds are pulled and you're not setting foot outside the door too much anyway, you know, just as well as level 5, I'd say, but they'd be glad of it. But like, even the touch of one thing there, Oisín said about when you're in these matches where you're expected to win and where things aren't going as you thought they should be going, a lot of the times it's up to the senior players. There's two or three lads in every team that'll say, hang on a minute here, no, we'll grab it by the short and curly, you know, and who are going to take charge of the ball, take charge of the situation and make sure everybody's doing the job they should be doing. And Kerry lacked that yesterday. They lacked that. I think that there was a deficiency of leadership out in the field when things were going against them.
So is this the normal growing pains of a young team that's trying to push its way through?
Yes, and there is huge expectation levels there of these lads as well, like, you know, and it's not easy. It's not easy being a Kerry footballer today. It's not easy being part of the management either, by the way, you know, on a day like today. But
how do you mean?
Oh, well, like, I mean, you're public property down here, really, you know, so you go to work today. A lot of fellas, you know, maybe they're working from home, maybe they're not. Like, you go, your teacher, you went to school, Sean O'Shea, I think, is teaching Donal Bell and colleague. I tell you, he's not having a fun time right now, I can guarantee you that. Like, you know, so...
How do you get through that? How do you get through that? What do you do?
Well, I'll tell you exactly what you do with it. You bottle it. And when you come around next year, and when you... And especially for a lot of... Like, you bear in mind a lot of the Kerry lads that are there, and, okay, they've had a lot of success at underage, and they rightly have gotten plaudits for a lot of what they've done over the last couple of years. But they still have to land the big one, lads, you know, and that's the name of the game down here. And you would hope from a Kerry point of view that they'll battle whatever grief they're going to get over the next while, and they will get it. I can guarantee you that, and come back stronger next year. That's all you can do, you know, and try and use that and learn from it, which would be the key thing, and make sure that they're not in that position again.
What they do, Paul, is they bottle it up like Cork did for the last 8 years. And it pours out then on a one special day that we get a chance to do it. So Cork have been doing that for a fair few years.
Eamon Fitzmaurice wrote a brilliant thing a couple of years ago now, where he talked about how Kerry, Cork had a win, would have a win and would never really back it up. You know, they'd have a good performance and don't back it up. Are Cork going to back it up this time?
I think so. I think, again, I mentioned it to it a while ago. I think it's important that they kick on from here. I think you've last night and today to, you know, relax and say, yeah, job well done. But I think after that, you're back into training tomorrow. And it's back to reality. You know, the end goal for every team is to win Sam Maguire, you know, and that's the reality of it, right? Now, this Cork group made a pact that we were going to take it game by game. And they've done that. So the next step now is a Munster final against Tip. I mentioned it. Look, they have to be winning games. They won yesterday. To beat Tip in a Munster final isn't going to be easy.
Will you be back for the Munster final?
I won't be back for the Munster final. No. At the moment, look, I'm back running. Hopefully, this week. But it'll be a case of week by week after that. Hopefully, the lads progress. It'd be great to play some part. But look, we'll see if I'm up to the pitch as well. There's some, as you saw yesterday, there's some fit lads out there. So we'll have to get up to that level by the time I even put my hand up. So look, we'll just kind of see how things go from there. But yeah, look, Munster final is a great occasion. I think it's a part that they start looking to that maybe after today and kind of, you know, obviously looking through, you know, areas of improvement for Cork in many ways as well. The great thing about it is there is many areas for improvement with Cork. You know, for example, just times there where I suppose the conditions dictated a lot of how the team set up, but there was times where Cork took the ball into contact, got turned over. You know, I think the turnover rate was through the roof. So that's something that Cork need to work on. I thought defensively they took steps forward, but there was occasions as well where, you know, David Clifford and a couple of lads got, you know, they were one-on-one, and that's not what Cork are trying to do at the moment. They're trying to help defence, you know, between, you know, all the defence, giving that protection there.
How are you trying to do it? What are Cork trying to do?
I think you could see from yesterday that, like, Matty Taylor, for example, a guy that's notoriously known for breaking the line and kind of attacking and running at the Kerry defence, he played a very selfless role yesterday. He got on a lot of ball, but what you don't see out of shot is the work that he does in relation to the ball on the far side, you know, tucking in a small bit, giving that bit of protection. Powter done it excellently as well, dropped off really well, filled the hole really well. And like Mara Shanley, for example, who was marking up against David Clifford, I thought he'd done a great job. But again, with the assistance of the other five backs as well, like, you know, it's I mentioned it before, it's a team defence game we're playing now. It's not just one-on-one individual battles. And I thought Cork were good, but I thought there's definitely areas for improvement on that as well.
If we look at the way things are, Oisín, now, we've seen all the contenders for the All-Ireland except for Galway in Championship football. How do you rate them?
I think Mayo look pretty good. I'm just worried about them as things progress around the middle. I think that Galway are at a massive disadvantage next weekend because they have no game, and I know they would have been crying out for a game. There's obviously no possibility of getting challenge matches or anything, so I think that might come against them. You know, Mayo, you know, started the game against Roscommon really well yesterday, and if they were to do that again, it's a tough ask for Galway. I think, you know, I think Cork will back up what they did, and you know, that's an All-Ireland semi-final against, you know, a Mayo or a Galway. Like, I mean, the thing, that side of the draw is very, very open. You know, any one of those, realistically, you know, not discounting Tip, but any one of those three teams could be in an All-Ireland final. You know what I mean? So it's amazing how the thing opens up, but also for a lot of teams, you know, an opportunity of a lifetime, really, you know, to get into that final and have one massive shot at a Dublin, you know.
What do you think of Dublin on the weekend? What did you think of Dublin?
I thought they were good. I thought I didn't think they were tested. Do you know what I mean? In the areas that, you know, you would expect Westmeath even. You know, we talk about, you know, a switch. You know what I mean? Just a switch, you're 12 points down. You know, the game's gone from you. I thought maybe switch and put a bit of pressure on and see if the, if there's...
They didn't fire a shot.
If you're gonna no, if you're gonna if you're gonna no, if you're gonna get any joy that way, and it was damage limitation to the extreme, I thought, because I thought, you know, with 20 minutes to go in the game, surely you press and you push and you see what could happen, like, but that never came. So, you know, they haven't still probably been tested, but that thing we talked about a couple of weeks ago, the discipline thing, is still there. Still a lot of balls moved up, you know, in the very scoreable range. But they look strong, physical, fit. We talked last week about, you know, no shape or make to them. There's a lot more shape to them.
Yeah.
We know exactly what they're about. To press the kick out in the aggressive way that they did with nine players, it's very difficult. You have to be very good. You're gonna have to be very good. No, don't get me wrong. Donegal are good. Donegal and Patton are very good at getting the ball away. They're very good at getting that ball over the top. I mean, we've seen how advanced Johnny Cooper is now. So to get that ball over the top, so there may be an opportunity then. But surely they've been hurt by that ball over the top by Donegal a couple of times before. I'm pretty sure they'll be ready for that one. But the Dublin just they look pretty good at the weekend, and I presume that they'll only improve from now. I'll tell you a big thing for teams now. Over the last number of years, you probably knew four or five of the Dublin forwards. That's a little bit more up in the air than it has been. There's a few guys who are putting their hands up, you know, like Bugler and Small, and there's a few other guys who are coming off the bench and as I say, putting a hand up. But maybe Dublin were not easier to clamp down, but a little bit easier to plan for, you know, your matchups, etc., over the last couple of years. So there's a little bit more movable parts in it, but look, they're still the team to beat, without stating the obvious.
Dermot, did you think Kerry were going to win the All-Ireland?
Honestly, I thought that they were in with a show, but I still would have made Dublin favourites beforehand. And like, you're looking at Dublin on Saturday night, and the one thing that impresses me hugely with them every day they go out, regardless of who they're playing or what the score is the work rate is off the charts from all of their forwards, midfielders, everybody, the tackling back, the covering of runners, 10 points up, 10 points down. It doesn't really make any difference. And what impresses me about them is that these are lads who've had a huge amount of success in their careers, and they're still coming back doing that time and time again. And you could compare it maybe to what Kerry didn't do yesterday, you know. But the big fear I had for Kerry coming into the weekend, and I'll be honest, I didn't think they were going to get caught this weekend over, but was a lot of the favouritism was based on two National League ends against Monaghan. I saw it on TV, Oisin was doing the commentary, like, but Conor McManus came on at half-time, really, in that game. He didn't play the first half. Kerry went through it. They won by 3 points. But as we've seen since, I don't know where Monaghan may be as good this year, maybe as they have been other years. And against half a Donegal team in Tralee, you know. So that was kind of where, that was a niggling thing in the back of our mind, you know, at all times, saying, is it based on that? But I would make Dublin hot favourites to win it. Like, I thought it was business as usual Saturday night. To be honest, if Jim Gavin was on the sideline, I don't think you would have seen too many changes from what happened, really, you know, in the greater scheme of things, like, you know. So, and they freshened up the scene. I think Bugler, he played well against Galway in the league. He did okay there the last day. They have new bodies coming through into their squad as well. I think that Lahiffel in the middle of the field, look, it freshens it up for them. And the fact that a couple of the older fellas are gone, they had to do that anyway in their squad. But you're still looking at fellas like Kieran Kilkenny, and I know, look, it's the first day out or whatever, and the opposition wasn't great. He was outstanding all the weekend, you know. So I still make them. I had them favourites before this weekend. I still think they are.
Kieran.
Yeah, look, it's hard to look past them. It's hard to look past them. I think that the biggest thing about this Dublin team is the gears that they can shift into any gear they'd like. They seem like they, again, we talk about moments in the game, but if they need to ramp it up, they just, you know, throw it in to fifth gear and off they go. And Dermot mentioned it there, like the likes of Ciarán Kilkenny and the hunger and the appetite to win is what sticks out with this team and did on Saturday night, no matter who the opposition is. And I know we mentioned it there before, but like that's very hard for a team to actually build, because that needs to be built over time. And Dublin have done that really well over the last number of years. But yeah, it is hard to look past them. I will admit that. But I think there's definitely, as we mentioned before, the discipline side of things. Oisín, you mentioned it there, but there is some chinks in the armor. I think there's going to have to be some sort of detailed opposition analysis done on Dublin in order to come up against their system and defeat it. But I think there is a sliver of hope there. But I think it's a case of, yeah, they're definitely where everyone else in the pack is chasing Dublin. But they've definitely, I know we mentioned before, have taken a step back towards the pack.
Paul, maybe not just as devastating off the bench as they once were as well. You know, we used to talk about, you know, 1-6, 1-7, 1-8, you know, Cormac Costello coming out of nowhere, having played no football, scoring 3 points, Bernard Brogan off the bench. So they're probably not as devastating as they have been off the bench. And there's a bit more onus. You talk about Kilkenny, there's a little bit more onus on Kilkenny to grab a few more scores. And he does seem to have the license now to play a bit closer to the goal like he does for his club. And he's somebody who can do damage in there. But probably just not as devastating off the bench as maybe they have been.
If we look at what's coming up this coming weekend, Donegal Armagh and Down Cavan in those matches, isn't it? It's interesting. In that other semi-final between Down and Cavan, there's a Division 3 team going to be in an Ulster final. There are two Division 3 teams in the Munster final. This is the tiered competition that we were going to introduce, where there was a big divide here. In other matches, I personally, from having watched Limerick Tipperary, Limerick should be in the Munster final. I think they left so many chances behind them, and they suffered a really, really poor refereeing decision when they were denied a penalty late in the game. In the Leinster Championship, I think Laois were... I think Mike Quirk, by the way, has done an outstanding job with Laois when you look at the footballers that Laois lost, even Attrard and Donnie Kingston this year. He's done an outstanding job. But Longford were 5 points up well into the second half there yesterday. Division 3 team, hugely, hugely competitive. This divide that has been introduced won't fix the real problem here, which was manifest in the Dublin Westmeath game, which was a contest that was over after 5 minutes, if you can call it a contest, because that was a Division 1 team against a Division 2 team. So the divide isn't between 3 and 4 or 2 and 3. The divide is between the top 4, 5, possibly 6 teams and the rest.
No, the divide's between Dublin and everybody else.
They're okay.
And you can't put Dublin, I don't think, you know, like the argument is you can't put Dublin in a championship on their own, much as we would love to.
Wouldn't be as good.
We can't do that, but definitely the divide is between Dublin. I mean, any of the other teams that I have seen could be taken out by a lesser late, if you like. Like I watched Down and Fermanagh yesterday, and let's face it, lads, the first half of the game was very, very, very painful. Very painful on the eyes. But I tell you what, Down came into the game. They looked like a team who needed a game. They're coming from Division 3. And, you know, as the game went on, you know, that's Tally. Tally won the Sigerson Cup with St. Mary's with, let's face it, 6 or 7 top-class players and a crowd of guys who were just willing to do a job for him. So I don't think that the void is what it was. And if anybody's looking for a counter-argument to a tiered system, I mean, this championship has given you all you want on that.
In the way, so there are two things I want to talk about the Cork Kerry match before we look at the who's going to win the matches at the weekend. The first is that incident in the first half where Peter Crowley got a little bit of sledging from the Cork players and got a free reverse. Have any of you guys ever been involved in similar incidents?
Sledging goes on in the field, Paul, I'm afraid to say. Always has and always will, I'd say, really, you know. No, that was a little bit, I suppose it was the fact that there was 2 or 3 lads came in at any one time. And in fairness, Phyllis, like, how would you put this? No, usually sledging wouldn't be done as close to the ball or as close to the play as that, that it might be held in kind of, you know, that it might be held back a little bit, that you might get a touch of it. Not that we've seen much of inside the goals, not to be honest about it, but that you would see a little bit of it going on, but it wouldn't be as fully up front as that. And that was just the passion of the game, look, and the way the game was going, and Cork had a great turnover and they were delighted with it, and they wanted to, you know, and that, and again, that leads back to the tone that they set from the start of the game, that they were being very aggressive and being very, they were leading the charge yesterday, and it fed into that. But proper sledging would be a bit cuter than that now, I'd say, Phil, might have, you know, that kind of way, usually, anyway.
Oisín.
Yeah, I've had a good dose of sledging. It's a big thing in Ulster. You get plenty of sledging in Ulster. Your sister and your mother and all these things, and they know your mother's name and your sister's name and all that sort of thing.
Any example? Do you want to give us an example of any stories you've heard?
No, but I will give you one example of me having a chat with a ref one time. I'll not give you his name, but his name was Mickey. And we were playing in a match, and he thought I was trying to buy a few frees, which it wasn't, of course. That'll be the song, so I wouldn't do that. But he literally would not give me a free under any circumstances. So I walked out to him and I said, Mickey, you know what you are? You're a complete bollocks. And he started to walk towards me and thought, oh, here we go. This is going to be yellow or red. And he came up and he says, Oisín, I've always thought you're a complete wanker, and you just confirmed that. And I just thought, fair play. I laughed. He laughed, and two of us walked away and went on about a job. And I thought, fair enough. I'm going to give you stick. You're going to give me stick. But as far as sledging goes, it gets very dirty up in Ulster.
Fairly special. Fairly special to be sledged by the referee.
I had to hand it to him. I shook his hand after the game and said, fair enough.
Kieran, much in Australia.
A lot of it in Australia. It's an interesting one, sledging. I don't know. When you're on top of a player and you get sledged, it almost acts as a, you know, I'm getting the better of you here. It's a funny one. Like, you know, I've had a player sledge me on numerous occasions, but like, you know, if a player resorts to that, I feel like he's under a bit of pressure. Different story we saw yesterday with I think it was Killian and Cullum and one other Cork player. Had clearly Cork had targeted Kerry's kickouts and they pressed right up, and it was a target for them. They turned them over, they were pumped because of it, and emotions got the better, and it backfired. But it happens all the time. Australia was terrible for it, like, you know, in relation to, it was always the Irish one, like they'd always go back to the Irish one, you know, what are you doing over in this country playing, you know, playing our game and all that kind of stuff. And Satanto Halpin used to always say to me, he was like, you know, if anyone ever says that to you, you know, I'll just say, you know, I've been playing the game a couple of years and you've been playing it your whole life, and I'm out here competing against you, like, you know, and getting on top of you, like. But it was always the easy one to go to. But yeah, it's a big part of the Australian game, I'll be honest. I think there's a lot of it goes on. But again, as Dermot alluded to there, it's very much away from the referee or anyone that might hear it. Like, you know, it might be a whisper in the ear or something, like, you know. But yeah, look, it goes on. That's the nature of it. It's a highly competitive sport. Like, it's the same as GA, you know. So I think you just have to accept that it will happen. But I think getting control of your emotions when you can potentially get caught—that's another conversation.
If you have to kick in a bad wide and a corner back who's out and pushes you and tells you about it, I mean, it's very, very tempting just to knock them out. But like that's just exactly what they're hoping for. But I see a lot of that going on at the minute. When somebody kicks a wide, you know, their corner back comes out, pushes them, or, you know, gets in his face, and so annoying. It's even annoying to look at, actually.
Can I just say that the one thing that is a bugbear of mine is the old tap in the head or the rub in the head if a fella, you know, turns or gives away a free or something, like, you know. That's, I think that's, to me, for others it might be crossing the line, but for me, I think that's crossing the line.
It's worse.
I think that's somewhere that I draw the line at, all right?
Oisín,
like,
you've raised cornerbacks a few times on this show. Do you have, is there something deep there? Some sort of issue?
Oh, no, no, cornerbacks are what they are. Like, the most of the cornerbacks that I played against, I've never, ever seen them kick a ball. You know what I mean? Like, and if either of my sons ever say I'm going to be a cornerback, like, I wouldn't let them. They play tennis or something. No way will they be a cornerback.
We have to ask the question. Last week after Tyrone were knocked out of the championship, there were questions asked about Mickey Hart. Is Peter Keane's position in jeopardy? He was given a 3-year term when he started. He's 2 years in. Is he safe, Dermot?
Yeah, he is. I think so, yeah. I think it'd be very harsh to get rid of managers off the back of this year. Like, do you know what? Like, I mean, it has been extraordinary year. Do you know what? It's yes, there'll be a lot of questions asked after yesterday. And you'd hope that the management team and the players will learn from it. But definitely he's next year to he'll have next year
fix
to it. Yeah, to fix it. And like, look, let's put it like this, lads, he'll be under pressure next year because you look at last year for Kerry and maybe the balance was too much towards attacking. This year, yesterday, was definitely way skewed the other way, you know. So there's a balance there to be had if that's the way they want to play the game, you know, that they can improve on and try and find the right mix. And, you know, Kieran said it there a while ago. The one thing I'd say about the system Kerry were playing was they didn't use it in the league matches early in the year. Now, maybe the game plan was for them that they were going to play the National League, use their period between the league and championship to fine-tune that system and then spring it on counties in the championship. Maybe that was the plan. But you'd wonder, had they enough time really to get that fine-tuned enough for it to be successful in this year's championship? But as regards his position, I don't see any issues there for next year now.
Okay, if we can just look at very quickly a run through next weekend's matches. Donegal, Armagh, who's going to win that, Oisin?
I can't see past Donegal. Donegal by 5 or 6 points, is it?
Kieran?
I'd say Donegal, yeah. I think they'll win it comfortably enough.
Dermot?
Same, yeah. I think Donegal will win, yeah. They were impressive last week against Tyrone. I think they're a team that could go deep in the championship this year.
The other Ulster semi-final, Down against Cavan. Oisin?
Very, very close one to call. I actually just fancy Cavan a little bit.
Okay. Kieran?
Yeah, I'll go for Cavan there, just based off their previous performance, to be honest with you. I thought they have a bit of momentum behind them now.
And
I think they'll get over it.
Yeah, probably Cavan as well. Like the one thing about Down is that compared to maybe some of the other teams is that they do have good scoring forwards like Don Lohier and O'Hagan and these guys. They have a bit of quality up front, but I just think with what Cavan have done already this year, they'll edge it.
Oisin, Galway Mayo, Connacht final.
I think I feel sorry for Galway, to be honest, because their preparation has been massively disrupted. They needed that game against Sligo. That didn't happen, and I think that gives Mayo the edge big time. I think they've got a bit of momentum. They look as like a team that's playing decently, and they've got a couple of lads on there who are score hungry and have made a real difference. And Conroy's made a real difference to them up front. He's quality, he's aggressive as far as he wants to get in the end of things, he wants to get scores, and that's exactly what Mayo have been lacking this past while. So I'd go Mayo to edge that.
Kieran?
I'd slightly go with Mayo as well. I think it's going to be very close. I think we mentioned Conor Loftus' move to midfield is a big help to Mayo. I thought in previous years Galway were kind of getting the on top of Mayo and around the midfield. But I think Mayo's running game now, and with Conor Loftus into midfield, I think he kind of sets it up well. You know, pops it left and right to Keegan and Durkin coming off the shoulder. I just think Mayo's running power will get them over the line. But I do think it's going to be a close one.
Dermot?
Yeah, I think I'd fancy Mayo just about. I think from Galway's point of view, the hiding they took up in Tuam a couple of weeks ago, they're going to come out all guns blazing the next day. Padraig Joseph is going to have these fellas bouncing off the walls before the game. So whether they have the quality in football or then to back it up as well, Shea Walsh, you see the problem with him, he's coming back from injury. The game this weekend would have been great for him. Damien Comer is a big loss to him if he's not there as well. Because of that, I give Mayo an edge. I think they were impressive enough yesterday with the likes of Durkin in particular driving down through the middle. I'd have maybe a few worries for them long-term middle of the field. I think they had to bring out Aidan O'Shea in the second half playing into the breeze really to get more of a grip out there. But I fancy them just because of the matches they've played to win the tight one at the weekend.
The Leinster Senior Football Championship semi-finals, Dublin Laois. Oisín.
Laois have done well so far, but like they're not going to be able to keep with Dublin. Laois will be trying to keep the score down, but hopefully having a go as well. But I go Dublin by double scores.
Ciarán.
Yeah, look, I think Laois will stick with them for maybe even half the game. But I think Laois will come again. Like they're very competitive. They're a competitive team. They're a team of competitors. I don't think it's going to be as easy as some people might think, but I think Dublin's running power will kind of come to the fore. Maybe the last 15 minutes or so, maybe they'll win by, you know, 5-6 points in the end.
Dermot.
Oh, Dublin will win. Like that's. I'm afraid that's the way it's going to be. Like, but it'll be very interesting to see how Michal sets out Laois. You know, is he going to set them up to have a crack? Will they have a go, or are they going to do what Westmeath did at the weekend and just avoid, you know, kind of complete obliteration like Meath and Wicklow yesterday? Do you know that? Is that the way they're going to approach it? So Dublin will win, but I think if Laois have a go, you'd like to see them have a crack and just see if they can expose some chinks in Dublin's armour anyway.
Speaking of Meath and Wicklow, did either of you lads tip Wicklow in that game last week? for those of you who are listening on the podcast, it's just
I didn't. I actually didn't think you heard me.
Yeah. I have to admit, I didn't quite hear you. It was only when I listened back. I'm really sorry I missed that last week.
I thought you would have picked up on it at the time, but
well, we'll leave it go. We'll leave it. Listen,
Ockham's not such a tough place to go after all.
Apparently not. Apparently not. So it's me, Kildare. So I watched Offaly Kildare yesterday, and it was I thought Offaly were exceptionally unlucky. They missed three goal chances, authors of their own misfortune in missing the goal chances, won by 4 points. So the improvement in Kildare is not immediately obvious, I think. So Kildare, it's Kildare Mead on Sunday. Who's winning that, Oisín?
After not tipping them last weekend, I'm going to turn tables and I'm going to go for them. I just think that they seem to have found a little bit. I know this young Cal Hickey, who coached for a while, he come on, got a goal. They have a little bit more pace in the team than they had done, and they've been crying out for forwards, and that seems to have been answered. They're not relying on one person anymore, so I'll just go Mead to just about edge it.
Ciarán.
Yeah, I think Mead to edge it as well. Just looking at both teams kind of holistically, top Mead's performance, the performances in the league justify them beating Kildare. I think they're competitive, they're hungry. Just from watching Kildare, like they're full of class, they've classy footballers, but I don't know if they've been tested to the extent that Mead have over the last, you know, 7-8 months. So I think Mead will win this one, yeah.
When we come back next week, we'll be looking at a review of all of those matches, and we will be previewing the Ulster football final and the Munster football final. So thanks a million, lads. Thanks a million for joining us, Dermot, on this dark day for Kerry football. Congratulations again, Ciarán, and thanks a million, Oisín. We'll talk to you all next week, and thanks a million to Renault as well.
Thanks, Bob.
With Renault, official car partner of the GAA, taking the passion of a nation to a whole new gear.